Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. There is a coastal garden situated in Buckie, Moray, on the northeast coast of Scotland, which once was a hillside covered in brambles. It was, in fact, a wasteland, and the brambles caught all manners of rubbish from tins to plastic bags. That once barren space is now a prolifically flourishing garden, thanks to the vision, hard work, and dedication of Lizzie and Malcolm Schofield, who share the space with their two daughters and their dog. I'm delighted in this podcast episode to chat to Lizzie and Malcolm about coastal gardening, winning Gardener's World a Garden of the Year in 2020, opening their garden under Scotland's Garden Scheme, and their first attempt at designing a garden together for the Scottish Garden Design Competition at Scone Palace on the 2nd and 3rd of June. We featured Lizzie and Malcolm's garden in issue 4 of Scotland Grows magazine, and subscribers can of course access all the back issues of the magazine through the thumbnail images on the last page of each issue, so you can catch up with Lizzie and Malcolm's story. But I am delighted to welcome you both to the Scotland Grows Show and chat to you about gardening in Scotland.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
We don't often get to chat to you, Malcolm, because we get to chat to Lizzie a lot more now that she's on Beechgrove and has such a huge Instagram following. So very nice for you to join us today, and we'll get to hear a wee bit more from you.
Yeah, it's quite nice for me to come out from the shadows, yeah.
So let's start with your garden in Buckie then. So maybe you could tell listeners just a wee bit about what the garden was like when you started, and what did you do to make it into the absolutely beautiful space that we see today?
Our garden was kind of an accident that we kind of snowballed into, to be perfectly honest. We owned our house, but all the land around it, because we live kind of in the middle of lots of other old little fishing cottages on the top of a hill looking over the sea. And we didn't actually own any land around the house at all. So we put an application into the council to buy the land just around the house because we wanted a little garden. We were thinking about having kids at that time. And the council came back to us and said no. They said they'd only sell the land to us if we took this massive bank that was lying along beside the garden as well. But the bank was horrendous. It's really, really steep. It was covered in brambles. Every time it was bin day, everything would blow onto the bank and get caught in the brambles. There were shopping bags and even a person once. We found a person once. And
it's true. it was thick and smothered with brambles. They were 5 feet wide and deep, and it was just,
yeah,
it was awful. Nobody wanted it.
They said they didn't want the upkeep of it. So when we bought the land, we had to take this bank. And so it was just a responsibility at first. We had to put a fence around the land. We had to clean up the brambles. So we immediately got stuck into the hardest part of gardening, I think, which is how do you deal with such a difficult weed like brambles, especially on a steep, steep bank. And that was kind of the beginning of it. So even just getting rid of the brambles, we made every mistake under the boot. Even at one point, I had brought an incinerator down to the side of the bank. I bought this incinerator at the local supermarket, put all these brambles into it, set fire to it. And it was like a jet rocket going up. And I could see the flames starting to lick the electricity wires or the telephone wires.
Yeah, don't do this at home.
Pretty much every mistake going, we've been there and we've done it. So I think it all just started from there. So we would kind of approach it that we'd take another, we'd reclaim another bit of the garden back. And we had then formulate an idea, well, where do we see this going? What do we envision this looking like? how do we tame that? Well, we kind of realize now there's no taming. There's no taming a garden. There's working with what you've got sitting in front of you. So, yeah, that's kind of where we started.
But there were other parts of the garden that weren't covered in brambles. So little bit by little bit, we started planting those up, building terraces, and just sort of dipping our toe into gardening and trying to figure out what would survive in our really harsh, exposed conditions right by the sea. And to start off with, we did that quite cheaply because money was tight. We did that by buying lots of garden-ready plug plants, which is a really simple way of buying lots of plants, and we shoved them all in the ground, didn't we?
We were those people scouring through gardening magazines looking for those 144 perennial plants. So, oh, don't care what they are, I'll have those. We found actually they were a terrific way, and actually initially they gave us the bare bones. That was really helpful because these people obviously create these collections really, really cleverly. And they give us the kind of the bones of our garden. So our garden's very herbaceous perennial. And in most of our herbaceous perennials, that's where our structure came from, was from those plug plants. So they were absolutely terrific, actually, and I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend that as a starter for people.
So which plants did you find then hoped best in that harsh kind of coastal condition that your garden found itself in?
Lots of foxglove originally were doing really well.
Lots of geraniums. Echinacea does really well. Gora does really well.
Tom Thumb.
The Echinops. All the Echinops and different thistly type plants like cardoons do really good. And yeah, I suppose once we figured out what was working well, we bought more of those types of things and then did some research as to why these plants were surviving in our coastal garden. And then we were able to build up our knowledge and then buy more plants that like those conditions. So yeah. It was a steep learning curve.
And did you have some dramatic fails then of plants which did not like those conditions?
I think a great example is I originally bought three little tiny eucalyptus in little 7-centimeter pots. And I planted them all pretty close together, actually, in a little triangle. One of them instantly died. He just hated it. But the other two, which were might have only been a meter away, for some reason, there was something about their positioning that they just were okay. And they weren't doing great, but they were doing okay. And I moved them again. And now they are huge. They're like 4 meter tall monsters in the space of a few years. So there's something very strange about we found about positioning plants on our site, where because we have so many elements we're working with, because one side's looking pretty much due north, pretty much with all the weather that brings right the way around in the compass points, that it even just moving a plant a few meters away seems to make a huge difference. So yeah,
that sounds really odd, but yeah, it does work, especially if it's sheltered by the wind or something like that, isn't it?
Even just sheltered by another plant or getting a reflection off a wall somewhere, just it's really, really strange, actually. And I think it does demonstrate how exposed the site is as well.
Plants in your garden have to cope with a kind of myriad of conditions, don't they? Because it's an exposed site. It's right on the coast. I guess it's windy and a lot of your garden is on a steep slope. So, you know, plants which are doing well there are pretty hardy.
And you always fall into that trap then as well of you want the plants that you can't have. So it's like, I love Trachycarpus fortuna. I absolutely love it. But, you know, it's just, where do you put it? But I still want it and I still try it. And I've got one sitting down at the bottom of the bank in my little kind of tropical area where I have all the plants I'm not supposed to have. Like, I've got two gorgeous bamboos down there. Every winter they look so upset. But there is something about different areas of the garden where, again, they do okay, and actually they're starting to look quite good now. So yeah, you always want the plants you can't have.
But then isn't that what gardening's about? It's about experimenting, isn't it? And it's about breaking the rules sometimes and just trying things in different areas.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to remember. And I think that because we had such limited knowledge when we first started out, I think that in some ways helped us because we were experimenting so much. And
I think that was an understatement there, by the way. Limited knowledge. I love telling people how we were sitting in Tesco's car park Googling what is a perennial.
So do you think that was what was the greatest challenge that you faced? Was it your lack of gardening knowledge initially, or was it the conditions of the garden, or was it the brambles?
I think definitely the slope, the very steep hillside, because I mean you can gain that knowledge, you can gain that gardening knowledge through reading up about things and looking on websites and whether you're going to buy a plant, but nothing really tells you whether it is going to survive on a slope. I would definitely say the slope.
I would say it was physically brutal. And I would say, like, I was a PE teacher, and I used to do lots of ultra running and lots of kind of ultra marathoning and lots of triathlon and ultra triathlon, all this sort of stuff. But the thing that probably beat up my body the worst was working on the slope. It is so physically brutal. It's like every time you drop a hammer, you've got to climb back down to go and rescue it again and climb all the way back up. It's just brutal.
Yeah, the landscaping was a huge...
Yeah, but like we couldn't even bring wheelbarrows down. So every stone, every piece of gravel all had to be carried down.
By hand in buckets.
By hand in buckets. And then, you know, compost heaps at the bottom of the garden, thank goodness for gravity. So it's easy to work with gravity. Then you want to carry compost up from the compost heap and you've got to carry it all. It's just brutal. But then I think our lack, it's that age-old story as well, though, where it's that lack of knowledge was actually probably an absolute blessing. Because if you had have known, you would just said no.
Yeah.
It's fine, thanks. And we're now stuck with a house because...
You don't want to move away from the garden.
Sorry. You can invest money in something and that's fine, but when you put blood and tears into it, you're not going to let go of it again, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And of course, you wouldn't want to leave that garden because you went on in 2020 and had massive success with it, didn't you? Because you won... or had the honour of winning the Garden of the Year competition, which was held by Gardeners World magazine. That was an amazing achievement. What prompted you into that? Because I think I remember, Malcolm, you weren't quite so keen.
No, in fact, we had quite a nice discussion about that one day when Liz was and I was like, no, because there were parts of the garden I'd only just finished. There were other parts I hadn't even started yet. And I didn't feel the plants were mature enough. I didn't think nothing was... So we have special ownership of different parts of the gardens that are definitely are, oh, this is my baby and that's your baby. It's kind of like that.
Is that a real good tip for how to work together with your partner then in the garden?
Yes, I definitely think so. Because
I'll let you know when we've got that figured out.
But
parts weren't mature enough yet, so we'd put in lots of immature plants because obviously our garden has sprung up quite quickly. We've only been working on it for about 7 or 8 years, and I didn't feel it was ready yet. But and personally, we'd only ever made the garden for us by that point. We didn't care who saw it. We just made it because that's what we wanted. And it's kind of like revealing something to people that really was very personal, and that was very scary as well. But Liz, I was like, Liz, if you want to do this, you go and do it. I'll help you with whatever bits of it, but I don't feel like I can have any ownership of this. And she went and did it anyway. And then I had to completely eat my words when they shortlisted us to the final seven, and even that just blew my mind. I couldn't believe that. And when
we were so excited. We were just beside ourselves. We couldn't believe it.
The shortlist was so good. The other gardens were so beautiful. Like, they were incredible. So
you had gardening experts. I mean, the guys that we all aspire to learn from. You had Alan Titchmarsh look at photos of your garden.
Yeah. Dermot Gavin. Kate Gould,
Irish hero,
won like numerous Chelsea flower shows and design loads, and it was just incredible to read their comments and to think that they had looked at our garden and seen the work that we had put in and found merit in it. It was it was mind-blowing. I still can't get to grips with the fact that Alan Titchmarsh has seen our garden. Do you know what I mean?
I know. And I use that quote because there was a quote in the magazine, and I loved looking at that quote. It's in the open garden scheme. It's in our garden profile. Yeah. It's really nice.
Yeah, so you went on to win the Garden of the Year, but more than that, you also then went on to win the People's Choice Award, and I believe then that had never been done.
No, the double winners, it had never been done. I think Gardener's World was quite surprised by that as well. But no, we were just absolutely blown away. We were just thrilled.
Most of our garden we can't see from the house. Most of the garden, actually, the public get to see more of it than we do. There's a public path that runs across down the bottom of the bank. So people out walking their dogs and things get more of the good of the garden than we do, to be honest. So I think an awful lot of the community feel a certain amount of ownership and pride over the garden as well, which is quite nice. People would stop when we're working in the garden, people stop and chat to us as they're walking past, and they tell us all their stories. A lot of people seem to have stories about the bank from when they were kids, because a lot of the local kids used to play on parachutes, jumping off the bank and all this sort of carry on. And an awful lot of the community had actually stopped using the path because it had become so overgrown with brambles. It was growing across the path. So I think when we took it into hand and started dealing with it, and the public started using the path again, I think that actually endeared us a lot to the community as well.
You must love walking by it and just seeing the changing seasons and all the effort you've put in.
Yeah, so I think there was an awful lot of community support behind those votes. To be honest, I think that's where a lot of that came from. So that was really lovely that we had their endorsement as well.
And do you think that confidence from winning Gardeners World competitions, as well as local support, was that kind of the impetus then that allowed you to make the jump to go on and open your garden under Scotland's Garden Scheme? Because that's quite difficult to do, to allow strangers to come in and visit your garden.
I think the sticky plaster was off by that point. And again,
gave us the boost of confidence. Because
we thought maybe there's some value here that other people see. Because like I say, it was really just the garden designed for us. So it was actually incredibly easy to open your garden with Scottish Garden Scheme.
They were very, very, very supportive. There were a couple who came across and looked at our garden and just had a general chat with us to see whether it would be something that we would be interested in. Yeah. Told us a little bit about how they open up their garden, just to give us a bit more of an idea of what we were getting ourselves into. And
they put all the logistics and everything in place as well. So they really do make it very, very easy. And I'd thoroughly recommend it to anyone, to be honest. And you get to make money for your own charities, which is absolutely fantastic.
Getting money for your charity, but also people are coming along to be inspired and to look at things that grow in your very difficult growing conditions must be a huge talking point for all the visitors.
It's brilliant. Do you know what I mean? I absolutely love opening our garden because you get to speak to so many different people, and actually people traveled from quite a distance. You had people coming down from the Black Isle, coming in from Aberdeen, which for a small garden in Bucky, that blew my mind. I was like, oh my goodness, why on earth would you travel to our garden for the weekend? But no, it was such an honor to just to chat to people and to see the parts of the garden that they really like and think, oh, I never thought about growing that, and you obviously can grow that, so I'm going to give that a go in my garden. It's a really great weekend. I love opening that garden.
What date is your garden open this year then under Scotland's Garden Scheme?
First weekend of July.
Yeah.
That's good. I'll pop that in the show notes so anyone listening and seeing a garden built on a harsh coastal slope full of brambles, you know, could come get ideas. And it's nice to, gardeners are so generous when they meet other gardeners. Everyone wants to just talk and share stories.
They have. They're really fantastic. We've had some local horticulturists that do gardens for other people. We've had head gardener from Big Estate that's now retired, and he came and looked around and was chatting to us as well. And even people from the local community that then want to share not just tips and experience and stories, but starting to do plant shares and stuff as well, which is really lovely. So yeah, that's been super.
But yeah, it's quite nice because the local community, obviously, who walk past that path come and they're able to walk around and get a different perspective of the garden. They're able to see it from the top looking down instead of the bottom looking up. So yeah, I think we're really well supported by the local community as well on those days. And it's just great, especially when the sun shines.
And so you've really challenged yourself. So, you know, from creating this garden from scratch to going on to win Gardeners World Magazine Garden of the Year competition, to then opening your garden under Scotland's Garden Scheme. But it might be fair to say that your biggest challenge is just ahead of you in a couple of weeks' time, because I know you have put an entry into the Scottish Garden Design Competition at Scone Palace Garden Fair and have been chosen as one of the 10 finalists, which means you actually have to go on now and create your garden together for show judging.
Yeah.
How
are we feeling about that one, Malcolm?
Yeah. This was folly.
I originally started to put a design together, and it was quite clear when I was speaking to Malcolm about it that he really wanted to be involved, and he had some amazing ideas. So I was like, well, why don't you do it with me? Please do it with me, because what we can accomplish together would be far outweigh what I could accomplish by myself, especially building a garden from scratch. I was, to be honest with you, pretty terrified of having to do that. Doing that solo. So I had a few ideas which Malcolm built upon. So
I don't know. I seem to think about these things quite a lot. So somebody asks me to draw them a garden, I'll draw a garden within 10 minutes. I just love that. I just love coming up with different ideas and different briefs for things. But I also watch too much television. So I quite like the concepts that there are behind different TV programs. So one of the ones that, the idea that our garden's premised on was this idea of, I've been watching too much Stranger Things, and this idea that you could have alternate realities that were divided by a portal, but one side was all kind of menacing and dark and the other one was kind of light and bright, and where, well, in particular in that program, these children could enjoy their youth. And I quite like that idea for a garden, particularly in the fact that we have had to overcome so many issues when it comes to shade and salt and spray. But on the other side, our gardens kind of really dry, sandy, and can dry out in sunlight very, very quickly as well. So I kind of had this idea though. This is our garden. This is a really great idea for a garden. Plus, this is the problem most gardeners face as well. If you've got a garden in shade and you've got the front of your gardens in sunlight, where do you start making sense of that? And I know that's where a lot of people make those mistakes. So we had this idea, well, you could have, let's do that with our little show garden. So we'd have a portal in the middle, and then we'd have one side that was really dark and menacing with all those really shady plants that always look quite, I don't know, otherworldly. And then on the other side, kind of that light, bright garden where everything feels good and happy. So that's kind of the premise we're working on at the minute. And it's been challenging. And we've been raking around architectural salvage yards. We've been trying to source plants, because when we need plants, we go to the local garden centre. But we've been trying to find different plants from what we'd normally be looking for. So we've been running around trying to get people to let us into their nurseries and stuff. Oh, come on, let us in here. And to be honest, we've found some brilliant sources for different resources. So we found a great architectural salvage yard out by St. Ceres. We found all sorts of wonderful there, and some really amazing characters to we were in Glasgow yesterday and found this most amazing garden nursery out by East Kilbride, just incredible plants. So yeah, it's been amazing, actually. In fact, our learning curve, I think, went through the roof as well, getting to see lots of different plants and different conditions that we hadn't seen before. So extremely stressful.
Yeah, it's a different way of thinking, because we're trying to think of doing it and making sure that those plants are going to look the best when Skin Garden Fair is obviously on, and that are they going to be in flower, and there's lots of different things that need to come together, but I'm sure it will.
Yes.
It'll be all right.
As well as the design aspect, there's then the planting up aspect. Yeah, I hope you're still talking to each other by the end of the weekend.
I haven't even mentioned finding a sponsor. So we've been really lucky that we've found Infinity Blue Dental.
Yeah, who I have paid for.
They're sponsoring our garden this year, so they've been really supportive. So yeah, they're going to be along in the day as well.
And anyone who comes along to Skoon Palace Garden Fair can vote for your garden as well, because as well as the overall winner, there will be a People's Choice Award. There will be a little QR code on your garden design, as on everyone's, and members of the public can also vote for their favourite garden. So that'll be good. That'll be really interesting. Malcolm's now feeling even more pressure. But it'll be a wonderful weekend, and it'll be great to see, you know, everything come together. And you're one of 10 finalists, so that will be just another lovely element to showcase the actual real talent we have in Scotland. And people.
Oh, definitely. And all the designs, we were looking through them, they look amazing. They look really exciting.
Really looking forward to it. So to finish off, we're asking all guests on the podcast to choose kind of their top three plants. So if you could only have three plants in your garden, what would they be and why? Now, you don't have to agree. You can both choose your own top three.
We wouldn't agree on this. You would agree.
So these plants don't have to be curated in any way. It can just be, if you only were allowed to have three plants, what would you have and why?
Go on then.
Oh, I would definitely have to have a dahlia. Probably preference for cutting flowers and having them in the house. And it's... Yeah, preference is just such a beautiful one. It's like a salmony pink. It's gorgeous. And then I would also have to have some sort of echinacea, great for drying. The seed head looks, the seed heads look beautiful in autumn. Yeah, great for making wreaths and stuff like that. And, probably agapanthus as well. Yeah. I love a bit of agapanthus, probably because it grows so well in our garden.
So boring.
So boring. Why? Boring. They're beautiful plants.
Wait till we hear Malcolm's three choices.
What's your choice?
Oh, so I've got this real soft spot for Melanthus major. Absolutely love Melanthus major and those big long honey spikes, and I just love it. Another one of my favorites, Fatsia japonica. Just such a good plant, grows pretty much anywhere, and just those big palmy leaves on it. It's just brilliant. And then third's problem.
It's going to have to be some sort of fern. You love a fern.
You see, I was going to go with either foxtail lily or bamboos.
Oh. Come on, you have to choose three.
I have to choose. I'd probably go with bamboos. So one that I've got a real hankering for at the minute is the walking stick bamboo, which has, it's got these really big knuckles on the stems. And in fact, we've just been out at a nursery that specializes in bamboo. And she was showing us that sometimes if the stems, anything interferes with them, they'll go in 90 degree angles. So it almost looks like pipework underneath a sink. They're really beautiful. Yeah. So I would go with that. But yeah, those are great plants.
Very different choices. And did either of you know exactly what the other one would pick there?
Oh, I definitely knew Moanthus major. Yeah.
So you would do well in a Mr. and Mrs. contest anyway.
Predictable. We're very predictable.
No, not at all, not at all. But you have a very inspirational gardening story and an aspirational garden for people who can actually come along and visit now. So if you were to give kind of a piece of gardening advice to a brand new gardener or to someone just looking to get out there and get started, what kind of advice would you give people?
I would say plan, sit down with a pencil and paper, as stupid as you'll feel when you do it, and sketch out where the sun rises and where the sun sets, and even keep track of that throughout the year and see how that changes. Maybe even draw areas of shade in the bits that seem to be shady at different times of the day. So you can see from that, and that'll mean that when you first go along to a garden centre and start putting plants in, that when you look at the back of the label of the plants and if it says shady or sun-loving, that you'll know exactly where it goes. I would say that that's a mistake we made far too often at the very, very beginning, was we didn't sit down and make a plan. We started with just bunging plants in the ground, and we probably wasted an awful lot of money doing that.
I would definitely suggest improving your soil every year. It's not just about, you know, putting some compost in and planting up your plants and then that's it done. Improve your soil. If you've got sandy soil, you know, you can improve it by just putting a mulch on it every year. And the same for like clay soils as well, like improving it.
Here's a huge one, sorry. Look at what resources are local to you. Mm-hmm. So we were very, very lucky that we have the seaside beside us, but there's a huge quarry not that far away from us, and there's a huge lumber manufacturer close to us. So we always knew those were resources that we could pick up very cheaply and very easily. When you start going along to those kind of the big homeware stores and stuff, things can get very expensive very quickly. But if you try and look at what's local to you, it'll actually make your money go an awful lot further as well. Plus then your garden will reflect the environment that you're in a lot better as well.
Yeah, and you're keeping everything local, so you're kind of cutting down your carbon footprint as well. Well, what great tips for brand new gardeners. You're inspiring a whole new generation of gardeners, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Well, best of luck to you both for your garden opening this year under Scotland's Garden Scheme. And I'll pop that date in the show notes if anyone wants to go along, and your Instagram handle so that people can actually look and see an awful lot more pictures at your beautiful feed on Instagram. And I will very much look forward to seeing you and your Stranger Things garden at the Scone Palace Garden Fair on the 2nd and 3rd of June.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. Look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah. It'll be great.
Yeah, look a bit nervous about that, but best of luck with the judging for that, and best of luck with the People's Choice Award on that day as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both so much for talking to me today, and I hope to catch up with you soon.
Bye.
Bye, MP.
Thank
thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Roots subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.